just wait and let everyone get settled. Okay, Ms. Mattingly.
May it please the court. It is undisputed in this case that had McClinn forced law enforcement officers to come to his home and arrest him, he would have been seized under the Fourth Amendment. The outcome is no different in this case simply because he chose instead to surrender to the sheriff's office.
But is there clearly established law in this circuit that a voluntary surrender to an arrest warrant is a seizure?
Your Honor, there's clearly established law from the United States Supreme Court in the Albright case in which seven justices recognized that a surrender to arrest warrants was a seizure under the Fourth Amendment. There's also a Southern District of Texas case, the Groom case, in which the district court held that a voluntary surrender to a criminal indictment was a seizure, and this court summarily affirmed that holding of that case.
So your authority, though, the only authority you're citing then is Albright. But didn't we later say in Evans v. Ball that Albright doesn't resolve the exact issue you were just asked about?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with Evans v. Ball, so I'm not entirely certain.
Then just think about Albright. Albright, the individual, if I remember, was given restrictions upon surrender.
Your Honor, yes, there was a restriction. In that case, the individual had to get court permission before leaving the state, I believe, in that case. But that was not actually central to the justices' statement that the surrender was, in fact, the voluntary submission to the arrest warrants. In that case, the Albright was released after posting bond, but between the time that he surrendered and was released, he was seized for purposes of the Fourth Amendment. The Supreme Court has long held that whether a person is seized depends upon whether a reasonable person in his position would feel free to leave.
And when did the seizure occur?
The seizure.
Did it occur when the individual finds out there's an arrest warrant? When the individual arrives at the station?
Your Honor, the seizure occurs when the individual arrives at the sheriff's office or police station and says, "I'm here to surrender to an arrest warrant." It's at that time that a reasonable person would not feel.
And let's say that the intake clerk at the front says, "Sorry, we're busy with other cases. Come back some other time." You would still say there's been a seizure when they just at the door say, "I'm here"?
Probably not, Your Honor. In that case, if someone told them that there's no one here, you can come back tomorrow.
Okay, so then be as precise as you can. When was the person's liberty physically restrained? When did this individual feel he couldn't leave? It couldn't be just when he says, "I'm in the door."
I understand, Your Honor. The seizure occurred here when McClinn went to the sheriff's office. The record is unclear as to who exactly he spoke to first, but it is clear that he eventually met with Defendant Ballard and signed a misdemeanor summons. But the seizure was the time at which he showed up to the sheriff's office and said that he was there to surrender to arrest warrants, and no one told him that he was free to go or that the arrest warrants were not valid. And in this case, it's important to note that it's what a reasonable person would think, and a reasonable person would not feel free to tell someone at the sheriff's office that they are there to surrender to arrest warrants and then turn and walk out. There would be, whether it was a receptionist or an intake person, someone would get an officer's attention and say, "There's an individual here surrendering to arrest warrants, and he's trying to leave." And that is exactly.
But then, do you agree that as a matter of law, almost universally, once he signed the misdemeanor summons, at that point there could be no seizure? He had no restrictions?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe I would agree with that. The misdemeanor summons, I think there's a bit of confusion in the record as to whether I believe the district court said that McClinn surrendered to a misdemeanor summons, but
he signed it.
He signed a misdemeanor summons, but that was after he was already at the sheriff's office.
I know that, but once he signs it and says basically release on recognizance, our law is pretty clear, then you don't have a restriction on your liberty.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. At that point.
So the theoretical construct you're asking us to adopt as a Fourth Amendment matter is not just that this is true, but it was clearly established to be true, that the minute an individual self-surrender says, "I'm here," they are somehow seized by the state, but then the only state action he alleges that occurs next is the state says, "Go." And at that point, clearly any seizure would be over. Is that what we're you're asking us to say?
The seizure would be over after he signed the summons and was able to go about his business. But here, he was seized between the time that he surrendered and then was able to go after signing the summons. The length of the seizure here is not relevant. It's simply the fact that McClin was seized without probable cause that entitles him to recovery under Section 1983. And furthermore, the seizure in this case was not consensual, as has been alleged by the defendants. Both this court and the Supreme Court have held that voluntary submission to a show of authority does not amount to consent under the Fourth Amendment, and that is clear because if you surrender to a police officer who has flashing lights behind you, you technically pull over under your own volition, but in fact that is still a seizure under the Fourth Amendment. It's equally clear here that McClin was seized without probable cause. McClin was seized because of comments that he posted on Facebook about the council's misuse of public funds, and specifically the criminal defamation statute that he was charged under had been held specifically unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court in the Garrison case.
And the charges were ultimately dismissed, right?
The charges in this case were ultimately dismissed, yes, Your Honor.
One thing I couldn't tell from the complaint is who did the assistant district attorney charge him?
My understanding is that there were charges issued, yes, and that the charges.
But the only way we can infer that on the record is that the complaint says 4 months later they were dismissed.
That's correct.
There's no allegation that he was actually charged ever.
My understanding, Your Honor, is that the misdemeanor summons was a document that McClin signed promising to appear on criminal defamation charges, meaning that there were, in fact, charges, but they, as Your Honor points out, they were dismissed or specifically rejected by the district attorney about 4 months later. To return to the probable...
Well, spell that out for me. So are the charges really the fact that an arrest warrant was issued based on the criminal affidavits? But none of the meetings included a prosecutor. So as best we can discern, there was never a prosecution, or there was and it was dismissed.
If I understand your question correctly, Your Honor, you're correct. I don't believe a prosecutor was present at any of the meetings. But in this case, there were at least charges that had been brought against McClin. It was just that they were never pursued.
Had been brought. So in other words, an indictment.
I believe so, Your Honor. I'm not entirely certain on that point.
Right.
The record, as you point out, states that the charges were rejected by the district attorney. To return to the Garrison case, in that case, the Supreme Court of the United States said that the statute was unconstitutional as it had been interpreted to cover false statements against public officials. The facts of that case were similar to the facts here. A district attorney in that case had called judges lazy and inefficient and said that their sympathies lied with criminals. And the court reversed the defendant's conviction in that case, holding that the statute could not constitutionally be applied to him. And since that time, two Louisiana Supreme Court cases, both the Snyder case and the Defley case, the Louisiana Supreme Court has said twice that the statute is unconstitutional insofar as it punishes public expression about public officials. The Western District of Louisiana in 2012 in the Simmons case referred to this as well-settled law.
Well, it's not unconstitutional as to any statement made of a public official. If it were made knowing as to its falsity, there would still be a criminal provision. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's the very narrow exception that the Supreme Court in the Garrison case, citing New York Times versus Sullivan, carved out. But importantly, in the Simmons case, the Western District of Louisiana denied officers qualified immunity because the court said there was no evidence that the speaker knew his statements were false or had reckless disregard for their truth or falsity. And the same is the case here. There was no inquiry at all on the defendant's part onto whether McClin knew the statements that he made were false or that he made them in reckless disregard for their falsity. And because of that, it was unconstitutional to issue arrest warrants for his arrest based upon his comments on Facebook without a showing as to whether he knew the statements were false or had reckless disregard for their truth or falsity. In the Defley case, the Louisiana Supreme Court addressed a situation where the speaker had called the superintendent a drunkard, and the government in that case argued that it wasn't really speech on an issue of public concern, and it was more of just an insult and could be prosecuted under the statute. But the court rejected that argument and said that so long as comments are made in reference to job performance, even if they are not exactly germane to job performance, they're still protected by the First Amendment.
Let's say there wasn't probable cause, but as in this case, an arrest warrant was issued by the magistrate.
That's correct, Your Honor. This court held in the Hand case, however, that an arrest warrant will not shield officers from liability if the defendants if the law enforcement officers misled the magistrate. McClain has pled numerous times in the complaint that there were false and misleading statements in the arrest warrant affidavits that led to the warrants issued in his case, and that is a statement of fact to support the notion that the defendants in this case misled the magistrate, and for that reason, the warrant does not shield them from liability.
Did Judge Dick say anything about that argument of your opposing counsel?
Your Honor, I don't specifically recall. But in addition, the Supreme Court of the United States in the Malley and the Messerschmitt cases has held that warrants will not shield the law enforcement officers from liability if the warrants are so lacking in indicia of probable cause that they should not have been issued. And I would submit to the court that this would also meet that test. Does the court have any other questions on the seizure or probable cause issues? Because if not, I'll move on to the First Amendment issue.
We will let you know.
Okay. To move on to the First Amendment retaliation claim that is also at issue today, the First Amendment prohibits government actors from taking adverse action against citizens for their exercise of constitutionally protected speech. And that is exactly what happened in this case when the council defendants and sheriff's office defendants conspired to have arrest warrants issued for McClain based upon things that he posted on Facebook. McClain has pled sufficient facts to show that he's entitled to relief under all three elements of a First Amendment retaliation claim in this circuit. The first is that he was engaged in protected speech. The district court agreed that McClain was engaged in protected speech because he was speaking out about public officials, and there's a long tradition of protecting speaking out against public officials under the First Amendment. The real issue here is whether McClain suffered an injury that would chill a person of ordinary firmness from continuing to engage in protected speech. In this case, because of his Facebook comments, McClain had to surrender to three arrest warrants and face charges that were ultimately dismissed. This court in 2016 in the Brooks case held that a reasonable jury could conclude that an arrest in response for cursing at an officer would be an injury sufficient to chill. And in this case, the only difference was that McClain, rather than waiting to be arrested, chose instead to voluntarily surrender himself to the sheriff's office.
I don't find anywhere that the pleadings really adequately address curtailment of speech. What was actually pled here?
It was pled here, Your Honor, that there were three arrest warrants as a result of McClain's speech and that he surrendered based upon those warrants. It was also pled that McClain suffered great personal damage, including harm to his First Amendment rights. And for that reason, the court can reasonably infer that he suffered curtailment of speech here.
I'm not sure. You say that as an advocate, okay, but if that's not specifically pled, I really wonder whether there's an adequate claim of curtailment or chilling of First Amendment rights.
I would submit to the court that there certainly is here. The inquiry is whether a person of ordinary firmness would curtail his speech, and a person of ordinary firmness who has arrest warrants issued for his or her arrest because of something that they post on Facebook will surely stop posting things of that matter on Facebook in fear of being further retaliated against by
government. It doesn't seem to me that the arrest warrant issue has anything to do with what then happened to him. In other words, he's got to plead that he was then curtailed in his speech. And the difficulty, he doesn't say he got a lawyer, right?
I'm sorry.
He doesn't say he had to get a lawyer.
That's true, Your Honor.
It doesn't say he stopped posting.
The complaint does not say that. That's correct, Your Honor.
The complaint, all it really says is what was just quoted to you, which is harm to First Amendment. What case do you have that that's anything other than a legal statement or conclusory? What's your best case that that equals curtailment under Keenan or Colson?
I would submit that the best case for the injury sufficient to chill is the recent Brooks case in which there was an arrest. But here, as Your Honor points out, it's important to remember that this case was kicked on a motion to dismiss, and for that reason, McClin only has to plead facts showing that it is likely or just plausible that he is entitled to relief, and simply the fact that there were three warrants issued for his arrest here.
But that's still going to the government action. That isn't saying what he then or any reasonable objective person did thereafter. So the issuance of the arrest warrant, you keep coming back to it, but really the only thing he pleads is that he had injury to First Amendment rights.
That's correct, Your Honor. And,
and one might assume that a person wouldn't speak much, but the difficulty that to me adds on to this in the way he pled it is, I don't see that he's ever pled that he actually was the person posting, that he's the speaker at all here. Could you quote to me from the complaint where he says, I spoke at all?
The complaint, Your Honor, I don't have an exact quote for you saying that exactly.
But you must know it well. Does he ever say, I'm the person that was speaking?
The complaint states that he was the person who was speaking on Facebook commenting about the council's misuse of public funds.
So, it does say that?
Yes, it does say that, Your Honor. Yes, it does.
Maybe when you sit down, you can find that quote.
Certainly, Your Honor. And finally, it's clear in this case that the issuance of the warrants was substantially motivated by McClin's exercise of protected speech. The sheriff's office defendants pursued an entire investigation based upon learning about the comments from the council defendants, and the council defendants swore out the warrant affidavits in this case after learning that McClin was, in fact, the party responsible for the speech. But if the court has no further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Yes, you've saved your time for rebuttal, Ms. Mattingly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Moody.
Thank you, Your Honor. I won't be able to say very much in 5 minutes, but then there are judges and lawyers that would say I don't say very much in 20 minutes. But I do want to compliment our opponent and welcome them to this Fifth Circuit, a bastion of the protection of civil rights for a long time. I just wanted to hit on a couple of points. We've briefed our response. I want to point out that there appears to be no longer any issue that there's a Fifth Amendment complaint against my clients. There was no real allegations of that. The district court found that that was the case. They've not really mentioned it in their brief. With respect to the Fourth Amendment actions, the seizure, I would point out that my clients, the three councilmen, didn't seize anything. They didn't arrest anybody. Their action that they took was simply going to the sheriff saying, what can happen here? What can we do about this? We're very offended by these malicious and horrible posts while we're running for office. And they apparently were told that, well, there is this statute on the books, criminal defamation. So they did fill out some charges, and that has been alleged. But what's not been alleged?
Well, actually, pause there. When you say they filled out charges, so
they filled out an
officer of the court knowing this case, they're the ones that charge?
They're the ones that filled out a complaint, an affidavit. Okay. And
which led to the arrest warrant?
It's alleged that there was an arrest warrant. It's not cleared in the record that there was an arrest warrant ever issued. Ordinarily, when the arrest
pled, and we're at a 12B6 stage, that's a fact we accept.
I understand.
So my question to you is, were there or weren't there charges that were brought in this case?
It's alleged that there were charges that were, an arrest warrant was issued. Whether or not charges were accepted by the district attorney's office, that's not been pled, and I don't think they can plead that. They were rejected.
That is what's pled. They were rejected. Well, that necessarily assumes that they were brought.
Well, they accepted the complaint from the complaining affidavits. And if there was an arrest warrant issued, then there was a magistrate involved. And my point here is that that breaks the causal connection from the statements made by my clients. They then would have to say that my clients, under the case law, said something misleading or an error or that was malicious or false.
And they do state the allegation is that's exactly what your clients
did. They do allege that, Your Honor, but what they don't say is where was the falsity? What false statement did they make?
Well, at a 12B6 stage, how are they going to know?
Well, this record has long since been concluded. The criminal case has long since been concluded by the
What's your best case for the proposition you just made, that at a 12B6 stage,
Well, I would suggest the Albright case says that.
That's on the seizure question. You just brought up the taint question. You said their allegation that your clients falsely accused them is insufficient as a matter of law.
My point is that they can't just make a conclusory allegation about.
What's your best case, I'm asking you?
Well, that's the Twombly case. You can't just make a conclusion. There's no.
Let me rephrase the question. Do you know of any taint case where we affirmed a district court dismissing when the complaint says, oh, the officer's tainted?
I'm not aware.
It all happens at summary judgment.
I understand. I'm not aware of any, Your Honor. The point of it is the magistrate broke the causal connection. And so
Judge Dick didn't accept that, right? I asked opposing counsel, you probably know, Judge Dick said I wouldn't be able to make that conclusion.
Couldn't make the conclusion. Right. So she then moved on to the second part of the inquiry, which was there was really no harm, no foul here.
Right. That then turns entirely on our conclusion that there was never a seizure.
Exactly.
Okay, that's difficult with the statement quoted by Albright, from Albright.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree.
Yeah.
But unlike all of the cases that are cited, including Albright and Keenan and others, there was no real arrest made here. This gentleman was not handcuffed. There's no allegation of that. He was not fingerprinted. He was not booked. He was not put into the jail. So the other point I would like to make, Your Honor, is...
But you're seized when police flash a siren, pull you over, they don't handcuff you, they don't put you in jail, all the things you just listed. No one's ever doubted that's a seizure.
Exactly right, Your Honor. And if we're going to then make this the standard, then we're going to be flooded with constitutional cases for traffic citations.
But the traffic context, no one disputes that's a Fourth Amendment seizure. That's a Terry stop.
Right.
So there's no flood problem. It already exists. The question is, how is that different than a show of force when the police power of the state issues you an arrest warrant? To me, that's louder than a siren. I get an arrest warrant, and I don't think I can just ignore it.
I agree, Your Honor, but Albright stands for the proposition that prosecution without probable cause is constitutionally allowable, but only if it's accompanied by incarceration or loss of employment or some other palpable consequence. So they state that cases like this, adequate state remedies exist, and we should let rest the heavy weaponry of constitutional litigation. And that's what we suggest this court should do. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Moody. Mr. Dupuy.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Cullen Dupuy. I represent the Livingston Parish Sheriff, Jason Ard, and the deputies that have been named in this lawsuit. I had an introduction prepared, but I'm just gonna jump right into the Fourth Amendment seizure issue. It's undisputable, based upon the record, based upon the complaint, Mr. McClain was not arrested, he was not handcuffed, he was not booked, he wasn't fingerprinted, photographed, he was not detained, he wasn't put in a cell, he didn't have to bond out, he had no travel restrictions placed on him whatsoever. Those are the classic symptoms of classic signals of an arrest. None of that happened here. It's not pled. That's what the district court relied upon in determining that there was no seizure in this case.
She said she was troubled, that the law was unclear. What's the case she cites?
If I'm not mistaken, I believe she says she was troubled when she got to the First Amendment aspect of it, when she was talking about whether this was such that would chill the ordinary speech, the speech of an ordinary person.
That's because she didn't think the guy was arrested. Right?
Correct.
Her underlying ruling was one and the same for the Fourth and the First.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. Yes.
And she cites Nice.
Yes, she does.
You rely on that case?
Not particularly.
Okay. So I guess my legal question, and I agree with your fact description, these are somewhat unusual facts, but do you know of any circuit that has ever said an individual is not detained, restricted liberty, when they get an arrest warrant and then surrender pursuant to it? Any circuit that said that?
I know of no case that said that, Your Honor. I know of no case that has had that exact issue squarely before it,
right,
and had to decide it.
This is your qualified immunity argument.
Absolutely. I think it's clearly not well settled or beyond debate.
What if arrest warrant, as we have to assume, is issued, person dutifully says, I've got to show and submit to that show of force, that sounds just like Hodari D. and Terry, and then they get there and the police say, you're going to spend the night, and then we'll let you go. Would you then say there is a Fourth Amendment seizure?
I would absolutely say there's a Fourth Amendment seizure. And I think that's what the United States Supreme Court in Albright and the Tenth Circuit case in Comiskey and the Eleventh Circuit.
Just because this is really difficult to carve these Fourth Amendment rules. So what if they say wait 2 hours?
I think that's a seizure.
So surrendering to an arrest warrant, which is a submission to a show of force, is a seizure if accompanied by some amount of time? Like, the guy's got to stand in the line before he can sign the summons.
It's accompanied by some conduct of the law enforcement officers to demonstrate to that individual that he is not free to leave.
Okay.
That's the scenario.
There are three people ahead of you in line. Wait.
I don't think that's a seizure any more than the scenario you brought up. If Mr. McClain had gone in and the front desk clerk said, we're busy right now, come back tomorrow. That's not a seizure. Otherwise, we're turning Fourth Amendment jurisprudence of what constitutes a seizure on its ear. We're making it a subjective standard as to that individual instead of the objective standard as to what the police did, and would that cause a reasonable person, given all the circumstances, to believe his freedom was impeded and he was not free to go?
Yeah, it is close, but I don't frankly see that getting an arrest warrant is less than a siren telling me to pull over.
Well, Your Honor, and plaintiffs have focused on, well, this is a surrender to a show of authority.
Yeah.
Well, Your Honors, getting a misdemeanor summons and having to go to court or responding to a misdemeanor summons, that's every bit of a submission to a show of authority.
Didn't we say in Evans v. Ball that if you show in court and the court says, okay, release on recognizance, that is a seizure?
The Nisek case after Evans, I don't think that's what it says. But if you're saying that's
what Evans... No, I'm not talking about Nisek. I'm talking about Evans itself.
Yeah, I don't recall that, Your Honor.
I may be wrong.
But I think when we get bogged down into this line of dicta about submitting to an arrest warrant is a seizure, all the cases, the initial cases, Albright, Comiskey, and Whiting, it was all in dicta. The Supreme Court specifically said, we render no opinion on whether he would have had a Fourth Amendment claim. And I think what these courts are envisioning is the normal process of, if you're surrendering to an arrest warrant, you're going to be going through the arrest process. And the courts are simply differentiating that your mere voluntarily going in to go through that process doesn't make that process a seizure. But every...
What if the misdemeanor summons that he signed says, and I will not leave the state?
It'd be a closer call, Your Honor.
It's a hard rule to carve out. Why isn't the rule just submission to show of force? This is a big show of force.
Your Honor, I disagree that there was a show of force.
Well, come on. Getting an arrest warrant's a show of police force.
Then we need to carve out a rule that the second the arrest warrant is issued that there's a seizure. And no court's ever done that.
But you have to submit to the show of force. Walking into a police station is pretty darn close to a submission.
Well, submitting to the... And that's why I get to back to my argument. Submitting to the summons is the same thing, but no court's ever held that. Is a seizure.
I think this focus is important, and I appreciate both arguments. Are you willing to concede that there's less strength to your argument that the complaint itself, I'm just trying to get distractions out of the way,
sure,
on the taint, that the individual sufficiently said that false statements were made that could have affected the magistrate? Even though you may win completely at the summary judgment stage, accepting that statement, we don't have case law that would say, we could say, oh, that's just conclusory.
I don't think that's...
You're relying on the no seizure rather than independent break of the chain.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think them simply saying false statements were made is anywhere close to sufficient. That, under Iqbal, that is the conclusory statement to establish the element of their claim. There's
they repeatedly describe it, and they wouldn't really know any specificities as to what is in these criminal affidavits until some discovery.
And with all due respect, Your Honor, they would not know whether a false statement was made either. But yet they've pled that. So, and that's where Iqbal goes to. Look, you can't make these conclusory allegations and submit these law enforcement agencies, the government, and everybody else.
You know our cases in this area, Bueller, Quadra, all those were decided to summary judgment stage. Do you have any case that's decided at this dismissal?
No, I think this is a little out of the norm.
And is it correct also Judge Dick explicitly wouldn't decide it on that ground?
That's correct. And Iqbal hasn't been around all that long to develop this jurisprudence.
Is there any reported Louisiana case law that affirms a conviction under criminal defamation of an office of officials?
I'm not aware of any.
Yeah. So the probable cause part also doesn't look like a strong argument.
Well, Your Honor, I think the issue, the problem is, we know, and you addressed it earlier, there is a little window where we can, speech can be made, even about public officials, that can constitutionally be punished. All the cases they've talked about have said that.
What's and alleged here is that the public officials that were upset, his word was, your predecessor counsel, that they were offended. They meet multiple times with your clients, no meeting with an ADA, if we accept the allegations, and outcomes a prosecution based on this little window that there's never been a reported case that you can tell me about. That's just a highly irregular set of facts that we have to assume is true.
Your Honor, I would point to the State v. Defley case. In that case, the court examined the content of the speech and to try to determine whether it falls under the constitutional window that we can punish or would be unconstitutional. Now, we're asking law enforcement officers to make that nuanced decision of whether this is the same speech as in Defley that fell in the unconstitutional window. I think the law enforcement officers, as pled in the complaint, did this the right way. The council members, citizens, come in and make a complaint. We go investigate it. That's alleged in the complaint. We obtain the evidence that the statements came from McClinn's electronic devices.
Right.
We submit all that with affidavits from the citizens as to what happened and let the magistrate make the call. That's why the shield of immunity is there.
Well, now you're back to the taint. It's not there if the officers misled the magistrate.
There's no allegations.
We do an investigation. You see, the allegation is you go into the guy's house, you seize his computer
with a search warrant.
With a search warrant, but we have to assume the search warrant was tainted. You take
sir. That case has already come up.
No. That we have to assume for this case that they falsely made statements that this crime could exist. Then the computer is subjected to a forensic analysis to determine who the anonymous blogger is, and he's charged with an offense that you can't tell me has ever been charged since Garrison before.
I think if Your Honor looks in the complaint, he will not find a single allegation that false statements were made in regards to the search warrant. That issue was litigated on a motion for 12B6.
False statements to get the arrest warrant.
The arrest warrant, yes. That's what they allege, false statements, conclusory, but not the search warrant.
So I guess, again, just trying to grapple with the law. Again, you've got no reported case since Garrison that a prosecution's been successfully pursued on this theory ever in Louisiana. Do you have one anywhere in the United States?
Honestly, I didn't look, Your Honor. But I will point to the Amore case out of the Second Circuit in New York, which dealt with a situation where the statute had been declared unconstitutional per se, and it was a loitering statute. And the officers arrested based on that statute. It had been declared unconstitutional per se like 18 years before. It was still on the books just like here. And the court said, the question is not what a lawyer would learn or intuit from researching case law, but what a reasonable person in a defendant's position should know about the constitutionality of the conduct. And police officers are not expected to be lawyers or prosecutors.
For purposes of just judicial notice, or you as an officer of the court, was an assistant district attorney ever brought in who brought charges? Were there or weren't there charges here?
As I understand it, the misdemeanor summons was issued, and the prosecutor, the DA, declined to pursue it any further.
There weren't technically charges ever.
Not that I'm aware of, but I will tell the court, I have not gone to look to find that specific question out, but it's my understanding that the summons were issued and the DA declined to pursue it.
Pursue the summons. All right, that makes more sense.
Moving to the First Amendment issue, the court relied on the fact that this would not chill the speech of a person of ordinary firmness. And the court went through a litany of cases, particularly citing the Bailey case, which quoted a bunch of cases where...
Is that Keenan? Bailey Keenan?
Bailey versus City of Jasper. Where the court... a host of cases where they said it did chill the speech, and a host of cases where they said it didn't chill the speech. And this case before the court today is much more, as the district court recognized, like the cases where it would not chill the speech of an ordinary person.
That doesn't really stand to reason, does it? That you criticize public officials, and then you have criminal charges that are pursued for having done that? Why would an ordinary person not be discouraged from making similar criticisms, perhaps of those same officials or of other officials?
Your Honor, you and I can disagree on that point, but I don't know of a case that has held that the issuance of a summons alone is enough to constitute, under this element of a First Amendment claim, sufficient to chill a person of ordinary firmness. Every case where just a summons was issued that I'm aware of and that we cited in our brief, the court held there was not sufficient activity by the defendants to chill the speech of an ordinary person.
You've read Judge Jones's decision, the Keenan decision.
The Keenan decision, yes. Guns were drawn. There was a lengthy detention at a traffic stop.
And in a footnote, she summarizes the case law, and she says the relevant inquiry is, were there intimidation tactics? And she describes ones that are sufficient, like a permit being withheld. So it would seem that a criminal prosecution is more intimidating than withholding a civil permit, a license.
And again, we can disagree, Your Honor, but...
Well, that's nothing we can disagree about if that's our law.
Your Honor, a misdemeanor summons under the case law has never been held.
Or an arrest warrant. Getting an arrest warrant, would that intimidate somebody if they got arrested because of speech? It would sound like that's going to chill an ordinary person from speaking more if every time they speak they're going to get arrested.
The arrest warrant was not executed in this case.
Is that the answer? Just because it wasn't executed? But presumably he surrendered on the same day he found out about the arrest warrant. So if he hadn't, he would have been. Is there any reason they wouldn't go out and execute an arrest warrant?
I can't assume that. That's not in the complaint, Your Honor. And the fact of the matter, as the court alluded to, plaintiff failed to satisfy the fourth element of actually pleading a curtailment of his speech in this case, which is essential. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dupuy. Ms. Mattingly? You saved time for rebuttal, and you didn't use all your allotted opening time. You left a minute, so instead of 3 minutes, we'll give you four on rebuttal. We don't always do that, but we're willing to do that. In this case, there are a number of issues for you to cover.
Thank you, Your Honor. I could not, to answer Your Honor's question from the opening argument, I couldn't identify a place in the complaint where McClinn admits that he made the comments in this case. The closest thing in the complaint is that the complaint states that the defendants allege that he made the Facebook comments.
Right. So if there isn't even a complaint that he's the one with legally protected speech, why are we engaging in the First Amendment analysis at all?
Your Honor, to the extent that the complaint is lacking because that exact statement is not in it, I would submit to the court that the proper solution would be to remand for McClinn to amend his complaint in this case.
But he didn't ask below to amend.
That's correct, Your Honor, but nonetheless, in this case, amendment would not be futile, and given the facts in this case, it would be appropriate.
I would thought you would say it's a plausible inference from what he did allege.
I do think it was a plausible inference.
In fact, it's one you operated on until just now.
That's correct, Your Honor. It was a plausible inference. Another, I wanted to respond to your question about Evans versus Ball. That case was didn't involve arrest warrants, importantly, and so it is slightly different from this case. It just involved a summons. So again, no arrest warrants, as is the case here. The defendants in their arguments discussed the allegation and the complaint of there being a false statement, and that statement is not a conclusory statement and isn't an element of any of the causes of action in this case. It is a statement of fact that makes it plausible that the magistrate in this case was in fact misled by the defendants, and therefore they shouldn't be protected from liability by the warrants. And furthermore, it's clearly established in this case that the defendants could not arrest McClinn, and for that reason, it's also clearly established that they couldn't issue arrest warrants, knowing the possibility that he might turn himself with those warrants.
And then, arrest plus self-surrender plus no restrictions. There isn't law that I find that conclusively says that's a Fourth Amendment seizure. It may seem intuitive, but I don't see a court saying it.
Your Honor, in the Eastern District of Michigan, in the Molnar case...
I know, but once you're looking at district court decisions out of circuit, is that going to get you to your clearly established prop?
I think it does, Your Honor, because importantly in this case, all of the cases that were cited by McClinn, there were several cases, including several district court cases, cited by McClinn establishing that the surrender to the arrest warrants was a seizure, and the defendants have not been able to identify a case saying that a surrender to an arrest warrant isn't a seizure. They've cited a number of cases saying surrendering to a summons isn't a seizure.
But we're asking police officers to understand law that we don't seem to be, no circuit's been able to articulate.
I think in this case it is entirely appropriate to assume that law enforcement officers know that they can't have arrest warrants issued for an individual because of comments posted on Facebook about them that they do not like. And for that reason, the actions of the defendants in this case it's clearly established that they were unreasonable. We live in a country in which people call both the current president and the president-elect things like Nazi, and the notion that law enforcement officers can have arrest warrants issued against all of those speakers would truly offend the First Amendment. And if the court has no further questions, I will submit the case.
All right, thank you, Ms. Manuel. Your case is under submission, and the court acknowledges that with special permission, you are a law student having presented the argument here. We appreciate your doing that and appreciate the briefing assistance also from law students at William & Mary Law School. And appreciate your participation. Your case is under submission.